This is a Get Serial podcast. You can check out more Get Serial at syn.org.au and at Get Serial on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And, speaking of music, it's our great pleasure to be joined by songwriting and singing duo Megan Bird and Megan Bird and Chelsea Allen from the group Great Aunt. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks very much. Thanks for having us.
So first of all, I've got to ask, Great Aunt, what's the inspiration for the name?
You should explain that one.
Oh, it's a hard one. Basically, it started off just me and my friend before Chelsea joined. We were just mucking around. I started working on some new music along this line. And we're trying to come up with sort of a name that sort of suited the old-timey, old-folky thing. And we're sort of joking about becoming old spinsters and how all those old spinsters are often great aunts. And then that kind of clicked.
And they own 37 cats. And they
they're
kind of crazy, but, you know.
Yeah.
I think 37 cats is around.
Yeah.
36 is not enough. 38 is just too much.
Yeah. There's excessive and then there's an appropriate amount.
So, Megan, you've worked before as a punk and hardcore guitarist, and Chelsea, you've been more of a jazz drummer. So Great Aunt's work is a pretty significant departure from the stuff that you usually do. So what was the inspiration behind that to try something completely new?
I was playing in punk hardcore bands, yelling and screaming, playing guitar for about 15 years or so. And then I sort of burnt out from it. And then I took a break from music and took a trip to Nashville and fell in love with this guitar and fell in love with the people there. And I sort of grew up learning blues guitar and listening to bluegrass and all that sort of stuff. So... whilst it probably doesn't seem like a natural progression to go from punk hardcore to this style of music, it seemed quite natural for me. Especially now that I'm older, I'm not so angry anymore, so punk hardcore is just not a thing.
You're out of your teen rebellious thing. Just want to scream. So your first performance was in about mid last year in the Bluebird Cafe in Nashville, which is a pretty auspicious place to make your performing debut. Can you tell us a bit about that experience?
It was terrifying. The songs themselves weren't new at all. Well, were very new, sorry. Some of them were only a day or two old. And I sort of went over there by myself, sort of just to sort of some soul searching, I guess. Chelsea was already sort of engaged working on the music with me. We're trying to work some stuff out. And I went over and I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to go over there. I'm going to try and get on some shows. And I called the Bluebird Cafe. And they're like, yeah, sure. And I'm like, oh, I thought it would be harder. But you never know until you reach out. It was daunting. Playing shows in Melbourne is great. Everyone's there to have a good time. And then when you go and play the Bluebird Cafe, it's a listening room. Everyone's told to be quiet and to pay full attention to the musicians that are playing. I've never had so many people stare at me. Mm. It's really, really daunting, but amazing as well. Oh.
Sounds like a pretty interesting experience, because I know, when you go to see a musician perform in Melbourne, it's usually, a pretty, I won't say rowdy environment, but there's usually quite an actor. And I can't really imagine that scenario where there's just a group of people just standing and staring at you. That must be pretty terrifying.
Yeah, it was, and it was a sold out room as well that night too, and there was people queuing to try and get in, and yeah, it was. They really appreciate the musicians over in Nashville, and it's a very different environment.
Yeah, there's situations in Melbourne. Like, I play a lot in the jazz scene, so they're in that environment. There's sometimes, a listening audience, so people will be there specifically. They will have, gotten a ticket, come specifically to hear music. Whereas in, we play other gigs in Melbourne where you might play at a bar or a cafe or something and people are there. And the drinking or the having fun is sort of part of the experience. But, yeah, having a listening audience is the best part, but also, yeah, the most daunting part as well.
Now, I'm not sure what you call this, but your current music has a lot of hand claps and foot stomps. Is that, what's it called, personal percussion?
Yeah, body percussion, or just percussion generally. Yeah. So I guess, that's, a lot of your influence. You started that with Tell Me When It's Over, but I'm going to take a lot of credit for all those stomps and claps because...
Well, you recorded them.
Yeah.
I was demoing them, but yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of them were recorded in, like, spots, you know, in houses and in bathrooms where there's, you know, interesting acoustics and echoes and stuff. So, yeah, it's nice to... We sort of don't want to have drums necessarily on this, but it's nice to have, you know, everyone loves to stomp and clap along. So it's, and we do that when we play live too. I got my dad to build us a stomp box recently. So you put a microphone underneath it and you stomp on it as hard as you can, and it sounds like a kick drum. So.
Oh wow! I'd love to see that.
It was cool. It worked really incredible. Well. So yeah.
And you know, when you do it yourself, who needs to pay a drummer?
Yeah, no, that's right.
So a lot of your current music was kind of was written and developed during your tour and travels around the south of America in during last year. So it's quite an interesting experience because you see with most Australian based groups, they kind of cultivate the music in Australia and then take it overseas. That was quite different for you.
Yeah, so I sort of started getting on this, you know, writing role, and then so I took some gear with me so I could demo some songs and send them through to Chelsea, and then she could send some stuff back through to me as well.
Yeah, we were kind of writing it between two continents, I guess.
Yeah, and I was working on it daily whilst I was over there, and Chelsea was sending me ideas, and then we're working on that, sending back and forth, and I think by the time I came back, there was about 18 songs or so. Which is the fastest I've ever written and the most inspired I've ever been to write. So I felt like I was on the right track.
Yeah. I guess they've been refined since you've been back too, so in the course of playing gigs and then, you know, the two of us working together.
Yeah, and because this genre of music is so new to both of us whilst we've listened to it, it's still incredibly new to us. So we're finding, as, you know, we wrote these songs, like, you know, almost a year ago now, or, you know, we've been continuing to write them, that we're further refining them and sort of adding more subtleties to them. And then, so the newer stuff that we're writing at the moment seems, is a little bit more sophisticated. Maybe still minimalist, though. We're trying to keep it as minimalist as possible.
Yeah.
So what, all things considered, what got you guys into the music industry?
I was actually studying a few years ago and studying something unrelated to music, and then I decided that I wanted to go and study music formally. So I auditioned for, like, the conservatorium in Queensland. So I went and studied, like, jazz drums, and then, you know, within a year or two, I was playing gigs and doing shows. And then I did some travel. I was really lucky to go to Cuba and study percussion as well. So I've been playing drums for probably 10 years, and then in the last couple of years sort of picked up double bass, and then always loved playing a bunch of different styles of music. So I play as, like, a country drummer and a rock drummer and a soul drummer, and now I play in a folk duo playing double bass and singing. So that's how I got started.
And I got started by asking for a guitar when I was 9 years old, and mum and dad got me one because they're massive music lovers. And I studied. I went to a really good high school, the second high school I went to. The first high school cancelled their music program, and then I realised how much I liked it and wanted it, and I threatened to leave school. So mum and dad found me a school in the west, Footscray City, that had, really good music program back in the day. And then whilst my, I guess, theoretical knowledge of music wasn't really up to scratch, then I went on to TAFE and studied sound engineering because I was really interested in, like, the technology aspect of recording and the physics aspect as well too. So I've been playing in bands since I was about 15, so it's a long time. Mm-hmm. I've always had a love for it. I think when you're a teenager, you either sort of edge towards more towards sports or music, and so it's sports definitely not a thing. Music, yes.
Oh, you and Nathan would get along swimming. Now, so it's now time for the high point of your career. You've brought your instruments into the studio. Obviously, nothing gets better than this. Are you okay to give us a bit of a serenade?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, cool. Okay.
Sure. So let's help you get set up. So just quickly, do you have any idea what song you'll be playing, or are you just gonna improvise and go where the music takes you?
We might play a new one.
Yeah, we might do. I'll put this up a bit higher. We might do one that has a very creative title of Untitled 2, because there's an Untitled 1, and we still haven't figured out a title
untitled
for it yet.
Untitled 2, so Revenge of
The Revenge Untitled.
Yeah, see, that sounds more interesting than if you'd actually had a title for it. Yeah. See, Untitled is one of the better titles.
It leaves it very open to interpretation. Anything you can, you know, you can imagine anything. Okay.
Let's go. This is Great Aunt with Untitled 2. Here we go. Here we go.
Oh,
thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Can I just say, first of all, the way that your voices blend together—that's absolutely that's amazing.
We've been working on that.
I think you know. I have absolutely no idea what to call it, but I think you kind of the synergy between you as a group is really
awesome.
Amazing and really added an extra level.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We work hard on like trying to get. Our voices to
almost sound like one and carry as one. It takes a lot of listening to each other to make sure it all gels. And it's the most important part of the music, I think.
Yeah. How's your finger?
Yeah, it's a bit sore. You have to excuse some of the bump notes in there. But
if I'd known, I would have brought in some Band-Aids. But,
I tried to catch a knife the other day.
Don't do that.
So that's something, because I noticed with you... you're going straight with the fingers. I don't think there was a plectrum.
No, there was a plectrum.
Oh, was it?
Some of it is syncopated, so I try to use my whole hand as well. I'm a finger down right now.
So actually, I could make a guess about what instrument that is. Can you just tell me so I don't have to make a fool of myself on live radio?
Don't worry, I was gonna ask the same question.
It's a mandolin.
I was gonna say that. Okay.
You should have guessed.
It's a beautiful instrument. I've only been playing it for about 7 months. I thought it would be very similar to guitar. No. It would have been easier if it was tuned the same. It's not at all. And it's quite harder on the fingers. My calluses have calluses on them now from playing this thing. It's a traditional instrument in bluegrass music. So I thought, well, why not? And one of our, I guess, favourite bands, the Punch Brothers, they've got sort of a virtuosic mandolin player who sort of plays progressive stuff. You would swear he listens to bands like Tool and Perfect Circle, Periphery and all of that with the way that he sort of plays, but he interprets it into bluegrass, or as they call it, newgrass.
And I think the most striking thing about that was the real emotion and the passion that it was quite delivered. I was quite amazed because my hairs were standing up on the back of my neck. You guys were really stoic. You know, just staring straight face at the microphone. It was
because I'm usually in a state of panic when.
So how much of that was developed from your own experiences? How much of it is just the creative process?
I would say all of it is personal. That's the one thing that I've been playing, playing in punk bands and stuff. A lot of it was sort of tongue-in-cheek and, I guess more about, I guess, broader political issues, all of that sort of stuff. But I think the thing that I sort of promised myself on this project was to keep it honest and write about stuff that has, that relates to me and my life, and then try and make it relatable to other people as well. So it's always all about some sort of personal experience.
I was going to say, speaking before, when you were talking, I thought, I could imagine you as a punk rocker. But after,
is it the band T-shirts that gives it away?
Metal band T-shirt.
Yeah, and just I think that overall, aura of not taking anyone's crap.
That's still me.
after playing in that genre, it's kind of difficult to imagine. And there's that massive gap between the stuff that I imagine you playing, earlier on, and the stuff that you play now. Has that been a challenge to adapt to that stuff, or is that just something you've fell into naturally?
It sort of just happened naturally. I think having a break from music and sort of resetting, and then going, okay, I'm going to try and write a song, and I'm not going to try and do it in a particular genre or way. And then this stuff just sort of started coming out, and that's where the stomping and clapping came out. I was trying to demo stuff, and I'm like, well, I can't really play drums. I don't have a drum kit, so I'm just going to start stomping and clapping around the house. So it's all sort of come very naturally. And a lot of my friends, from the punk scene and the metal scenes and that, they're kind of a bit taken aback about how I got there, but at the same time, they love it too.
They love it, and they come to gigs more than anyone, though. Yeah. Your punk friends are big fans of bluegrass.
I have one more Slayer request, though.
Yeah, we get asked to do some strange covers.
I'm just imagining those gigs right now. Just imagining.
There's
this
no
song.
Slam dances at this. maybe a hoedown eventually.
So, what does the future hold for you guys career-wise?
Well, we just came back from a tour of Queensland and New South Wales, so we're kind of hopeful to do that more in the next few months. Like, we've got some gigs booked in Sydney, so we're going to do some more interstate shows. We literally last night just booked some airfares to the US, so we're planning to do some shows over there. We have a recording that we're sort of in the middle of, which we're pushing ourselves to get finished. So we'll hopefully try and launch that before the end of the year. And then, yeah, the sky's the limit, I guess. We may expand the band to be bigger at some point, but, you know, for now it's the two of us working together seems to work pretty well. So
Just get as many good gigs happening.
Write as much interesting music as we can. Just write some, you know, stuff that people don't expect, maybe.
And you know, even with the thing you mentioned before about adding to the band, you know, they say if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know,
that's true. We've been lucky to meet some really awesome folk and bluegrass musicians recently, and every time we meet them, we're like, oh, we should ask them to join the band. If we did, we would have a band of like 30 people.
Yeah. Although that does give you the opportunity to collaborate.
Yeah, totally, oh, yeah. Totally. And we met this beautiful violinist recently, so we're, you know, hoping to do some collaborations with her at some point in the future. But for now, it keeps it nice and intimate when it's just the two of us, and it's so much easier to organise a band of two. I play in big bands, you know, 10, 12, 15 people, and it's so much harder to organise a band of 15 people than it is to organise a band
practice,
of two.
Just to practice, let alone a tour.
Yeah, we have the luxury of being able to rehearse in a lounge room, so it's kind of nice.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, if you had a band of 30 people, we probably would have needed a bigger
yeah,
studio.
Yeah, we might need an auditorium of some kind.
Yeah, so that song, Untitled 2, it hasn't been released yet. How far away is it from...
We're going to add it to our EP.
Yeah.
So whilst we were on this tour, we were kind of thinking about the EP and what we want to get out of it, and then we'll play in this song. And we're like, we need to add this one to it. So
yeah.
We're going to start recording it.
Hopefully get recording it in the next kind of week or two, because the recording is something that's half done or one third done, so we just kind of keep adding to it and and then going, no, delete that, start again. Hopefully we'll have the recording done by the end of the year, but we sort of decided not to push ourselves because we were stressing ourselves out a little bit with the time frame, so we just want to make the best thing that we possibly can at this point in our kind of musical development, I guess. So so short answer, hopefully before the end of the year.
Well, I think we both speak as one in wishing you all the best for your future music careers, and hopefully you'll be, you know, shredding it on the mandolin and the double bass in the future.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
So you've been Chelsea Allen and Megan Bird joining us live in the studio for Sin 90.7. And if you want to, please contact Kickpush PR to organise media passes for any of their upcoming shows. Thank you so much again for joining us in the studio. We really appreciate your
time
and your music.
I appreciate
it.
Okay, so we're going to some more of our own music. It's probably not going to be quite as good, but then again, not much would be. You're listening to Sim 90.7. Don't go away.
This has been a Get Serial podcast. Get Serial, 6 till 9 a.m. weekdays only on Sin.